Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I caught up with Preds general manager David Poile yesterday at Bridgestone Arena, and we talked about a lot of things. Obviously, the story of the day yesterday was Bill Haslam joining the Preds ownership group. We got David Poile's thoughts on that. The Philip Forsberg contract situation, his thoughts on the Colorado run to potentially a Stanley Cup. We'll find out tonight if they can get it done in game five, and whether or not how dominant they've been changes the way he feels about this Predators team and their loss to Colorado. Some interesting responses to that question and his thoughts on Josi finishing in second place in the Norris Trophy voting as well. Here was that conversation yesterday between myself and Predators general manager David Poile.
I'm curious, just from the standpoint of Governor Haslam jumping into the ownership room, what does that tell you about not only the strength of the franchise, but the league as well, for somebody of his stature to want to be involved?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, obviously, when you think of Governor Haslam and his background as a Tennessean and what he's done business-wise, what have you, it's a big name, and it's a really, really good name in terms of reputation and what he could bring. As I mean, just getting to know him in a couple of meetings that we've had, I mean, he totally believes in Nashville. That's a great starting point. He seems to be an unbelievable sports fan, and again, just in some of the things I know business-wise that he's been able to do, it just feels like this is a tremendous handoff from a great owner and Herb Fritch to another great owner here in Governor Haslam.
You were just going through the days in 07. I remember those days well. Can you believe that, you know, that this team, this city is at this point where it's a foregone conclusion the team's going to be here, but just it continues to get stronger from that standpoint?
You know, it's fantastic, and you're right. For those of us that were around then, that was not a good time. It was a little bit of a dire straits. Financially, things were not good. It was a very unstable franchise, and easily without Herb Fritch and his group coming in, easily we could be another team that's not called Nashville, and hockey would not be here today. So I mean, I think the city owes Herb Fritch, Tom Sigrun, and the group that bought in in 2007 a huge big thanks for what they did, and got everything going in the right direction. And I say that both on ice and off ice, and I'm real proud of where we are as a part of as Nashville Predators, being part of the fabric of the Nashville community, and you know what we do. And again, it's not always on the ice; it's how we're involved in the community, and you know, doing a lot of the right things to represent Nashville and Tennessee. I would say the right way. And again, this transaction to happen over the next 3 years to Governor Haslam seems like a terrific fit. And you know, once again, Herb Fritch has done the best thing for the Nashville Predators, and as he said to me, he says, I mean, he's just a super fan that happens to be the owner.
Yeah. You mentioned the Forsberg situation. Has it been encouraging to you that he's been pretty visible here in Nashville this offseason? Well, you read anything into that at all?
If I'm reading anything into it, it's positive, and everything is positive in the conversations. It's just that we don't have a deal done, and I remain optimistic. There's going to be a deadline here. We get lots done oftentimes when there's a deadline, but it's am I concerned? Absolutely. I mean, it would have been very good if we could have had this done a lot earlier, because there's certain things that you would do or could do if Philip was signed, and there's certain things that you can't do. And now we're in a situation where we're formulating all sorts of different plans, because we have to be ready for either scenario. So it's not where I want to be, and I would hope that if there's going to be a resolve, that it could be resolved. But yeah, we got to prepare for whatever now.
I know after the Colorado series, you guys said that, you know, obviously there's a gap between you guys and Colorado. But I'm curious, as you've watched the playoffs go along, I mean, they've lost three games in the playoffs at this point. Has it changed the way maybe you view even your own series, just given how dominant that they've been?
No, and I don't say this to be cocky, but I think I knew that going into it. I mean, I've had conversations with fellow general managers where, you know, basically we were predicting that they're going to be the next team you know, for several years. And, you know, I think that, you know, even when you talk about the Central Division, I mean, in theory, they could be the top team for the next few years. So we might be just fighting for second place. And I think that they're that good. And, you know, again, it took them a lot of years to get there. And when I say a lot of years where they were no good, missed the playoffs for many years, but had three or four draft picks in the top five and things like that basically we've never had in our whole history to get there. And now you're seeing the fruits of that taking effect, where Cale Makar is, you know, fourth pick overall, and he's one of the best players in the league. McKinnon's leader, who's a first pick overall, and Rantanen and Landeskog were top 10 picks, and on and on. So they are the best team, and it's you know, we have a long ways to go to catch them, but we know how good they are, and we know what we need to get.
David, what was your reaction to Roman finishing in second with the Norris Trophy, including one vote leaving me off the ballot entirely and a couple of fourth place votes as well?
Yeah, very disappointed. Very disappointed. I didn't. I just I respect and appreciate the what the formulas in terms of the voting, and I respect the writers around different cities, but it's unacceptable what happened there. And you know, the voter was a person that I don't personally know, but you know, he watches a lot of hockey, writes a lot of hockey, and it just made no sense at all. And it's not just the Roman thing. So you yes, I'm prejudiced on this, yes, but it's not just Roman. I mean, if you see some of the voting, Connor McDavid, arguably the best or second best player in the league this year, was left off of ballots also, or wasn't voted for a lot of people, first or second. And that's there's nobody that's watched any hockey this year that could possibly see that any different than what I'm saying. So I would think we need to have a look at the process a little bit.
David, thank you.
Appreciate it.
So that was David Poile yesterday, Nashville Predators general manager. Obviously, we touched on a few things there, Joe. Right off the top of your head, maybe one or two things that stand out to you from that interview from David Poile.
Well, definitely that he joined in the ripping on Scott Powers.
He did do that.
That's my takeaway. Jeez. It's about as mean as David Poile can be to someone, probably.
I think so.
Scott's taking quite a beating here in on the show. But the very concerned, really very concerned, yeah? That the want to make sure I have that right.
He just said, am I concerned? Absolutely. So
okay.
It was interesting. Like,
he expressed concern.
Right. Like he expressed concern. You know, I heard Jared and Caroline talking about this yesterday, because he starts off, you know, talking about how, you know, he thinks it's a good thing that Forsberg's been hanging around. The conversations have been positive. There's just not a deal that's done yet. And that he still remains optimistic that they can get a deal done. And then just kind of immediately starts going the other way with it, talking about, am I concerned? Yep, absolutely. I'm concerned because, you know, I would have liked to have had this done by now. And there are things that you can do if Forsberg signed, things you can't do as he remains unsigned here. So I kind of took that as a little bit of maybe in the public trying to get this ball rolling a little bit from Forsberg's side of things. Now, you know, we sit here today, it's June 24th. We're a few weeks away now from free agency. Like, and I heard Willie and Darren talking about this yesterday, and Willie's theory is kind of, you know, once the calendar flips to July, that's when the urgency is going to crank up. I think Willie threw out the day, like July 5th, you need to start really going to see, you know, what's your best offer, who's going to blink, who's not going to blink, all those different things. So you still haven't reached that point yet. And Poile did say multiple times yesterday that sometimes when the deadline is closer and it's more in sight, a lot of times that's when pressure is applied and the deal gets done. So we'll see what happens on that front. But it was interesting to me that he kind of began his answer talking about, you know, how optimistic he was, and then he immediately shifted to his concern and kind of went through that whole process.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, he did ultimately sound like a guy. And later, I was in a scrum later with him, and Glennon was kind of asking a lot of the Forsberg questions, but kind of the same thing, you know, hopeful. But I think there's definitely concern. I mean, and why wouldn't there be? One thing that he said there was, you know, I don't, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but I wouldn't look at this like Forsberg has another team in mind he wants to go to, just that, like, there's just a gap. You know? Yeah. And he did, by the way, he did say, you know, he did confirm it. And I guess he hadn't before. I guess it was just kind of assumed. But he said that there's, you know, like, it's an 8-year deal that they're offering. Like, Glennon actually said, like, is it an 8-year deal? There was a little confusion on that, too. I think maybe I asked about, like, okay, and then once the free agency period starts, you can't offer 8 anymore. And Poyle said, yeah, we can. But I don't know. Maybe I asked it incorrectly. But that has been clarified. Like, when we've been talking about this, I was like, wait, so we've been lying for how long to the people? But we actually haven't been lying.
We have not.
Yeah, the 8-year option for the Preds to offer, which is, of course, a pretty big advantage for fully guaranteed contracts, that is that ends as soon as the actual free agency period starts, and then everybody can only offer a max of 7.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was interesting stuff there from Poyle on a variety of fronts. Like, and we'll get to this a little bit later. Like, I asked the Colorado question about, you know, do you feel any differently? Because quite frankly, in the past, that's been something that he said. Like, he's felt a certain way about a playoff series, and then you watch a team go on a run, and it makes you feel a little bit differently. So I was interested to see what he said there. And his response is basically, yeah, no, I don't feel any differently. Like, I kind of knew that this was what Colorado was. So I found that to be pretty interesting, because I think, and I even heard Jared talk about this yesterday, like, I told him that I asked David Poyle that question. I didn't tell him what Poyle said. And Jared was just like, oh, I bet he for sure just feels differently about it. And it's going to see how, you know, everybody else is getting dominated. So what does that say about us? To Poyle's credit, he did not change his tune in that answer.
Hope you were listening, Jared.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on my interview with David Poyle, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What did Poyle's comments yesterday mean about the future of Philip Forsberg? We'll continue that discussion next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got some tickets to give away to see Steely Dan coming up at First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, July 13th. Be caller number 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Steely Dan at First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, July 13th. Once again, Joe Rexroad, that is First Bank Amphitheater, not Ascend Amphitheater.
That's right. My debut at First Bank. Couldn't ask for a better band to watch for a debut. I've only seen them one time in my life. What a glorious day that was.
I bet it was. Can't wait for day number 2 for you.
Katie made fun of them and said they sound like they're jazz flute, like Will Ferrell and Anchorman. I don't care. She's wrong. They're amazing. And she's going to come to me for this one too, and she's going to like it, darn it.
That's right. No question.
She might not go, but I'm going to go.
So, Joe, from Poyle's comments that we played in the last segment for Philip Forsberg, what do you think those comments mean? Was that messaging? Do you think there's legitimately just pure concern there? What all did you read into with the comments of David Poyle on the Philip Forsberg contract situation?
Well, I guess my feeling on, like, what we've discussed of how this is going to play out doesn't really change. I guess if anything of the entirety of what he said yesterday, if there's anything that I kind of have taking away from that, it would be that the gap's still pretty significant.
Yeah.
Is that a huge surprise at this point? I don't know. I think, like you said earlier, Willie's talking about July 5th. Maybe it's July 8th. Maybe it's July 11th. I mean, I do think that, look, I mean, I just think that at some point it's very simple. It's David Poyle deciding whether he wants to come to where they are. I don't see why they come toward him. Maybe I'm wrong, but that'd be my guess.
The only way I could see them coming towards him would be the how scared, for lack of a better term, is Forsberg and his agent of losing the eighth year? I don't know. Like, some people are afraid of that. Some people aren't. Like, you know, Matt Duchene, obviously, he never had any intention whatsoever of signing back with Columbus, so he didn't really care about the eighth year. Like, I'm sure Columbus would have liked to give him an eight-year deal. And
he was out of there.
Yeah, he was out of there. Now, this is not that situation. Like, I said this yesterday. Like, I still believe Forsberg wants to be here, but him wanting to be here and the Predators wanting to have him back, like, we're past the point where that really matters all that much, I think. Like, you got to get a deal done. Like, you've got to get closer on the terms of the deal. So, I agree. Like, I think Philip Forsberg and his agent has most of the leverage. The only way I could see them coming back is they're looking around and they're saying, you know, if we don't get that eighth year, it's going to take a whole lot of money on the open market for us to make as much money as we can make here with the Predators. And I wonder, you know, they're playing hardball with that right now, I would assume, without knowing what both offers are. You know, what are the Predators offering? What is Philip Forsberg wanting? That's the only way I could really see, I think, Forsberg coming back to the Predators a little bit. Yeah. Not coming back in terms of signing, coming back in terms of what he's asking for.
Coming back on what he's asked for, yeah. But how much of a – and I really don't know, like, how much of a – you know, like, a feel are they going to have for, like, the market before it actually happens, you know?
They're not supposed to have a feel at
all. They're not supposed to have any.
Now, yeah. That doesn't mean that doesn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. So – and this is where there's that, you know, like, hey, we'd be interested in this. A little birdie told a little birdie and somehow got to you. We'd be looking at this. And again, it just, as much as, and Poile kind of poo-pooed a little bit the Forsberg being out and about. I mean, but he also poo-pooed Forsberg and interested in another team. But I still think that Forsberg, what he thinks of Nashville moving forward. And that's still a lot of my question on this, because I think Poile is going to ultimately get where he needs to get to keep him. I think he will. Maybe unless Forsberg is just at a, and JP Barry are at a ridiculous spot, you know, like $11 million a year or so. I mean, you know, unless it's just completely just off the map, I think Poile is going to get there. Or get awfully close. And there's still the question of, for Forsberg, of course he loves Nashville. He loves this organization. This is where he's grown up. But how does he feel about the way things look in the next few years? Because I don't know what to expect. I don't necessarily see Stanley Cup contention with the current makeup of players and prospects.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I've said a few different times, like, I don't believe that this core group is good enough to win a Stanley Cup right now. So, you know, this Philip Forsberg, he's got a different perspective than we do. He's a part of it every day. You know, a lot of what that core does is up to him. So, you know, he could view that completely differently and think that they're on the verge of being a cup contender. He could think that they're farther away than we do. I don't know what Philip Forsberg is thinking when it comes to this. I just, like, yesterday's comments, I don't think really changed the way I feel at the end of the day in terms of a deal getting done. Like, if you force me to pick right now, I would say that the Predators and Forsberg will get a deal done and he'll be back on an eight-year contract. It is interesting, like, to hear David Poile basically, he was kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth yesterday, talking about being optimistic, but absolutely pretty concerned about the way that things are going. Like, I wonder if that was an attempt publicly. You know, he's pretty open publicly yesterday in terms of, you know, I would have really liked to have had this done by now. It is an eight-year contract. Like, the eight-year contract thing, we all knew that, but that's the first time that he's come out and actually said it that way. Like, I wonder – I mean, Darren and Willie put it this way yesterday. I thought it's a great way to put it. Like, who's going to blink first? Is Philip Forsberg and his agency going to blink, or is David Poile going to blink? Because I kind of lean towards David Poile and the Predators having to blink first on this. But I do wonder how important that eighth year is to Forsberg. It's if it's important, I mean, Willie was spelling this out yesterday. You could give Forsberg an eight-year, $8 million per season deal, and that's $64 million. That means that somebody on the open market has to offer you more than nine for 7 years to approach that money. Now, when you start talking about money that's that big, is it the biggest deal at the end of the day if you're a million or two off here or a million or two off there without getting into the state income tax thing of knowing where he's going to sign? I don't know. Maybe it is to some guys. Other guys, they care more about winning and what the fit's going to be at that point too. So I don't know where Forsberg falls into that category. But really the thing, if you're the Predators, that you're trying to hang your hat on right now is we hope this 8 year is really important to him, because if it is, that gives you a pretty good shot. If it's not, you're going to have to pony up with the money.
I mean, how many people are out there clamoring to like sign with Ottawa or something, you know?
I mean, not a lot. Like, I did see a prediction yesterday that has Forsberg signing with the Seattle Kraken. I was just like, oh.
Ooh.
Okay.
I guess that's at least like ground floor, you know, to try to bring a franchise somewhere. But
I mean, that would tell me that they would have to offer him about $10.5 million per season. But I guess there's that chance.
Their uniforms are sweet, let's be honest. So I guess Poile is optimistically concerned.
Optimistically concerned.
Is that like this summer's competitive rebuild? David Poile. Hashtag optimistically concerned.
I don't know. We'll continue to take your thoughts on David Poile and the Predators. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. Teron Davenport at 8 o'clock. Ari Wasserman from The Athletic at 9 o'clock to discuss a big-time move in college football recruiting yesterday. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. The Game is Nashville's home for NASCAR. Tune in tomorrow through Sunday for the following races. Actually, it's today through Sunday at the Nashville Super Speedway. The Rackley Roofing 200 at 6:30. The Tennessee Lottery 250 at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And, of course, on Sunday, the Ally 400 at 3 o'clock. You can also join Chase McCabe every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock for Chasing Checkers as he talks to the drivers and gets you set for racing weekend. NASCAR on 102.5, 106.3, The Game is presented by the Backyard Blues Pools, Tootsie's Infield Club, Nashville Super Speedway, and the Nashville Fairground Speedway. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're talking the Philip Forsberg situation with David Poile's comments from yesterday. Says he's optimistic, also admits that there is some concern that's involved as well. So there's a specific date in mind that I have in this conversation where if I'm the Predators, and I don't know if they'll handle it this way, but if I am in charge, I want it handled one way or the other by July 7th, because July 7th is the first round of the NHL draft. And we see a whole lot of things happen at the NHL draft. There are trades pretty much every year. You know, you talk to some people, and Elliot Friedman brought this up a few weeks ago on the DDC. You know, some people are telling him this could be a wild offseason, just in terms of player movement, people getting traded that maybe you don't expect to get traded. You know, obviously, free agency, a pretty good free agent class coming up this summer as well. Like, if I'm the Predators, I want it figured out by July 7th, because either you got him in the fold and you know that Forsberg is a part of your team, and then you can make some moves if you need to at the draft via trade to add to that if that's something that you want to do, or you know that he's not in the fold. And you know, Poile brought this up a couple of times yesterday talking about, you know, I don't even know what specific term that he used, but basically fallback plans if Forsberg's not going to be a part of your team. Like, I would, if I'm the Predators, as a part of those fallback plans, I would like the ability to move around in the draft or maybe acquire people via trade in the draft. Like, I would like that to be an option for my fallback plan. So I don't know if the Predators are going to handle it this way or not, but if I'm the Predators, I'd sure like to get this figured out one way or the other. Either he's coming back or he's not by July 7th, because there's a whole lot of things you can do at the draft on July 7th if you know the future of Philip Forsberg, regardless if that's him coming back or if it's him leaving.
No, great point without question. You don't want to go into that not knowing. You don't want to go into that not knowing if you're if he's in there or if you're going to have to go out there and try to replace him with a proven high scoring forward, and that can absolutely change how you approach the draft. This does bring to mind real quick, Robbie, also going back to my mailbag, someone asked me about Christian A. I'm going to give a shout out to Christian A, who asked me, what would the Preds have to give up to move from 17 to 2, which is the Devils pick, to either draft Shane Wright or Slavkovsky? He said, swap first round picks and give them Cunnan, Myers, and Tolvanen.
It'd take more than that.
Yeah, I was like, no, man. Like, I feel like there's a lot of, like, when teams, teams have, like, underperforming players. Like, if you give another team a whole bunch of them, they somehow add up to a good player. No. Yeah. No. Now, Tolvanen, I do think, in some form, this offseason could be discussed. Like, I could see that as a possibility just on his own. I still think around the league, he's young enough. There's enough potential promise there that maybe he could be part of something if the Preds wanted to move on. But,
well, I think you hit a key phrase of that, like part of something. Like
yes.
There's an idea that, like, the idea that you could just, like, sell high on Tolvanen right now because he used to be a first round pick and there's a lot of hype around him. Like, to me, that's dead at this point. It just, you're going on production right now. So if you're selling Tolvanen by himself, you're not getting a whole lot back for Elie Tolvanen. Matter of fact, with his contract being as cheap as it is, like, to me, there's no way you're getting anything back for Tolvanen right now that is worth more than the risk of just keeping him and seeing if it could work out. Now, could Tolvanen be maybe a sweetener of a bigger deal? Like, if you had something bigger in mind and you were going to trade a roster player plus Tolvanen to go get such and such from, a top six forward from whoever, could Tolvanen maybe sweeten the pot a little bit? Yes. Like, I think that's kind of that's the way, if you went that route, that could be the way that's used this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's there's something there, but not a ton at this point. And I think, not knowing conversations, different options, different possibilities, at 1.45 on his deal, I think it's worth another go, probably, and that's probably what we'll see. But you can't rule anything out, and that's the thing. I mean, to your point at the beginning of the segment, is it would be very beneficial for the Preds to know if number 9's back or not by the time they start drafting or potentially making deals on draft night.
Well, and you've got until July 13th with free agency beginning to get this thing going. But, like, to me, I would really like to know, if I'm David Poile, what it's going to look like draft night. Because let's say if you get it figured out by July 5th or 6th and you know that Forsberg's on your team, well, that, all of a sudden, you know what you're looking for out there the rest of – whether that's free agency. Like, everybody keeps talking about free agency as the backup plan, which I understand it. The Predators, if they lose Forsberg, they're going to have a ton of money that they're able to deal with. You also are bidding with other teams where players have their free choice of where to go. So you can want Johnny Gaudreau all you want to. If Johnny Gaudreau wants to either go back to Calgary or he's got a specific destination in mind that he wants to play, it doesn't really do you a whole lot of good if you want Johnny Gaudreau and he doesn't want to play here. So, like, if Forsberg's locked in there by draft night, via trade, via free agency, whatever it is, like, you know what you're looking for at that point. I think that would be very beneficial. Now, do I have high confidence at this point that this is going to be resolved by July the 7th? I don't know if I do. I think this could go down to the 11th hour, as they say, Joe Rexrow.
Yes. Yeah, but maybe the Preds should view that as the 11th hour, Like, maybe. July 6th as the 11th hour. I wanted to give Heidi from Dixon the floor for a moment because this is going back to discussion, but on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, it's just Heidi typically makes fun of the bands I like, but she said here an interesting point. We have to acknowledge the possibility that this ownership adjustment could be worse than what we've had. I wouldn't bet on it, but it can't be ruled out. And there's seen some other ideas like that. And look, I don't know what it's going to look like with Bill Haslam. Ultimately, having majority ownership, it's unknown. Again, I think the biggest thing about this that is, I think, undeniably positive is he is a Tennessean through and through, and he's extremely rich.
Yeah.
And again, look, I mean, the guy has been in, he's been a governor of a state, been in leadership positions. He's been the public eye. He's very accustomed to having things he's done questioned. And I think all that is like good experience. And I think that another positive that I would expect is that he will be more responsive to the fan. Now, decision-making, who knows? I mean, that's it's on him to learn as much as he can and make good decisions. I mean, that's basically impossible to predict. But at this point, with everything we know, say it's a pretty positive development for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, I mean, could it be worse than it's been? Sure. Like, I think the ownership group for the most part here has done a really good job. I mean, obviously, the whole point of the ownership group to begin with was to save the team. So, in that landscape of it, they did a phenomenal job, and hockey has turned into a huge success here. So, now they're transitioning into a different period. I mean, I thought Bill Haslam said it well yesterday. Like, nobody's thinking about whether or not the team is going to stay here or if hockey can work here. Like, we know the answers to those questions. So now it's how do you consistently put yourself in a position where you can compete for a Stanley Cup? Like, it's a totally different spot that they're in right now than they were this time 15 years ago. So could Bill Haslam come in and could he maybe make too many decisions and that can end up backfiring? Yeah. I mean, we see that happen in sports with owners a lot. My guess is the operation's probably not going to change that much. Like, I think Bill Haslam will be more vocal. I think he'll be more public for sure. But I don't know at the end of the day that it's going to be all that different as they move forward here.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, well, look, the difference, which will come at some point, is the people running the hockey will change.
Correct.
Correct. That's now, I suppose, Barry Trotz comes in and you basically kind of keep it all together, and David Poile retires at some point and you have the same philosophies and processes and things like that. I mean, that could continue for a long time. But it's still, though, even in that case, you still are talking about a different person at the very top of the ladder making the final decisions on things. And I think, again, given Poyle's struggles in recent years and bad moves, probably a lot of fans would sign up just for that, even if everything else stays basically the same.
Coming up next, it is time for the Red Rant. Michelle Konecznik's rant of the day coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
You might want to sing it note for note, don't worry.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Red Rant with Michelle Konecznik here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check out our rants every morning at 7:45. Before we get to Michelle, Joe, I do want to real quickly point out, this is just the beauty of being in charge of the chair, in charge of the music. She gets after us. She plays some songs that she knows we don't like. And then with her, she comes back with this soothing song. Michelle, she knows what she's doing back there. It's good stuff.
Listen, I actually hate that song, and I intentionally played it because I needed to get my blood boiling just a little bit more.
Okay.
And before,
good to know.
Before I read Rant, I need to give a shout out really quick on a lighter note. My stepdad, Dan, retired today, 30 years.
Hey, Dan.
Dan, you guys know Dan. We had a nice lunch together, so I need to give him a shout out. 30 years in our school, district teacher, gym coach, all that jazz. So, shout out D-Man. And now I will begin to rant.
Shout out to Dan, lunch friend of the show.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, and Derek Henry, he was at lunch that day too, just not sitting with us.
He was.
Okay, so you all know that when I have a specific rant and I text you guys, I don't do them too often, but when there is something that really gets under my skin, it gets under my skin. And I would encourage everybody listening to text in, because the rant that I'm about to have right now is kind of like an overarching, you know, umbrella of, I guess you could just say, driving. Okay. So I was on the phone with my little sister, Isabella. She's 17 years old, just got her license not too long ago. They're still in upstate New York. And she calls me the other day, kind of out of the blue, and we're talking, right? She's driving to go get her haircut done. Very cautious driver. I've driven with her before a couple times. It scares me at first, but she's very cautious when she actually began the driving. And we know wherever you live, or at the city or a suburb, there's always construction everywhere. And sometimes you are blocking an intersection solely because there's construction and you just have to wait your turn and you got to, you know, stay in line. And the construction workers and the crosswalkers, they're guiding everybody and telling you where to go. She calls me and she's like, Michelle, I was driving and, you know, kind of blocking the intersection, but there was so much traffic and construction. The bridge was closed, yada, yada, all this stuff. And I was like, okay, Belle, like, what happened? And she's like, this lady couldn't get out and they're close to each other. She's trying to like get her car out and like turn or something, right? And Bella's car is blocking the intersection. And essentially this lady like turns over and is like, F this, F that, you F idiot, stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, I got heated. First off, if you look, she is literally a teenager. Second off, that behavior is completely unacceptable. This is why we have a horn, right? You have a horn on your car. Nobody's getting in a car accident or anything on those terms. She was being a safe driver. She was being a smart driver. And I trust her. And then the other day I was driving here in Nashville. And I see a car merge, not one, not two, not three, four lanes across a highway to get off an exit because, God forbid, you miss your own exit. That
drives me nuts.
Is somebody you need to be yelling at because they are putting other people in danger. And if you want to put yourself in danger, that is your own thing. But don't you dare put other people in danger. And basically my rant is, do not road rage at my 16-year-old sister or anyone or speak to anyone that way. Listen, use your horn, honk, whatever. That's obnoxious too, but... And then also, I think, you know, we get our license when we're 16, and this is kind of how I'm going to like wrap a bow on it and tie it all together, but you get your license when you're 16, and then essentially you never have to take your driver's license test again unless something happens and you get it revoked. But we forget every single day that we hop in the car, and it's such second nature to us that we drive all over the place and it's so easy to get distracted or to act like a psycho crazy person or to speed really fast because you're going to be 2 minutes late to work or you're going to be late to meet somebody. And if people are listening, I know you listen to the radio a lot in the car, like, let's just take like a second to be safe when we're driving and to not make stupid decisions or road rage the heck out of people, because that just gets my blood boiling, first off. And, you know, like I said, it's something we do every single day, but it's also so dangerous, especially when you're being careless or reckless or you just want to rage out on somebody. So I'm going to choose my raging out to do it as a rant to make people drive safer and to be nicer. So there we go.
Well done. I feel like that was a very, it was like a motherly rant from Michelle Konezvic. And, you know, it was fierce. It was direct. It was to the point. But it ends with some compassion and some well wishes for everybody to just take a moment and be safe. That's all we're asking for here on the program.
I get it from my mother, Carolyn. She's very fierce. She taught me well.
So my takeaway is that if you're blocking the intersection, F-bomb's not okay. If you go four lanes across the exit, F-bombs should fly.
Yes.
Okay.
And police sirens.
Yeah, road rage is a problem these days.
Yeah, I fear the road rage things can go bad, you know. So that's one thing. But also, I agree. Like, look at who, because frankly, I mean, first of all, I agree with you, Michelle. You shouldn't act like that anyway. But like, if you see, if you look over and a car did something you didn't like, and again, it's not like the biggest deal in the world. But if it's like a kid or maybe like a much older person,
yes,
in particular, maybe.
Maybe calm down.
Maybe keep that one to yourself. But some people just, you know, just lose their minds. I also think of this rant, Michelle, and I'm like, man, it's a good thing this isn't like a show in Cincinnati or Cleveland or something, because my God, every Ohio driver sucks. I'm just going to paint with the entire broad brush on that. Someone prove me wrong. Prove me wrong.
Yeah, and it's just, it made me, because she's, of course, they're just starting to drive, and she's a safe driver, and yeah, she was probably going slow, but I think sometimes people just overreact to the absolute extreme, like overreact on the five laner, you know, road rage on them, that not somebody who's literally 16, sorry, blocking an intersection because there's construction everywhere.
It has always been amazing to me, like the lengths that people will go to save, I don't know, 15 seconds,
if
30
that,
seconds,
if that.
Maybe a minute. Like, you know, the driving across four lanes of traffic to get off on the exit's one thing. Like, I've seen people, like, you're stopped at a stop sign or a red light, you're trying to turn right, and you just gun it out there with you know, cars 22 feet away from you rather than waiting. That's always my favorite, is like when somebody jumps in front of a car and then you look behind the car that they jumped in front of and no one's behind them. Like, yeah, dude, all you had to do is wait 5 seconds. You eliminate the risk. There's no one behind them and you lost 5 seconds of time. It'll be okay. Like, the people are in a hurry.
Well, no doubt. And I will say that, like, sometimes I do get frustrated behind really, really slow drivers sometimes.
Oh, me too.
Even though, like, I am deemed a grandpa driver in my house, it's really not true. Sometimes I get impatient and I'll just kind of blow around somebody. Like, if it's like a two-lane road, the worst is when you
Joe.
Do that. Well, I don't put up, there's no digits extended. There's no nastiness. I think we've talked about this before too, like wave when someone lets you in. I always let someone in, all that stuff. But sometimes I do blow around somebody, and the worst is when then you like both end up at the same light about a half mile up the road, and it's like it absolutely did nothing to help you, you know?
I will say, back in my younger days, probably early 20s, I was known a time or two where if somebody was yelling at me on the road to maybe follow said person and get out of the car at the next stoplight, that may have happened a time or two. And then one day I thought to myself, that's probably not going to end well one day, so I need to stop doing that.
Guys, I urge you this, and people listening, if you want to use some digits on your fingers and you're really, really just outraged and somebody driving just really makes you mad, give them a big old thumbs up. I swear.
Yeah.
Somebody gave me their digits one time and I looked back at them and gave them a double thumbs up and I felt great. You know, kill them with kindness, kill them with kindness.
That used to really bother me. Again, back in apparently I was really angry in my early 20s. That used to really bother me. And now when people do it, I just laugh. I'm like, okay, whatever. But yeah, I've been known to get out of the car a time or two. And then I thought to myself one day, yeah, you're probably going to get shot doing that. So let's stop.
Yeah, let's stop.
We're really digging deep here, ripping some scabs open. I love the sarcastic thumbs up. I got to do that sometime.
Yeah. Hey! It's great. It's great because then the other person looks at you just in, oh, wow. And they're like, then they feel bad. They're like, they just gave me a thumbs up. Yeah. Or it just makes them more mad. But yeah, kill them with kindness. Give them a big old smile too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of response in the text line.
Yeah.
Someone asking if 16 years old is too young to drive.
I don't know. Sometimes I say yes. Sometimes I say, like, it should be cut off at, like, age 70. Like, I've had many different thoughts on this throughout the years of my life. So I ultimately come back to, it's fine the way it is. I just think everybody that's not me sucks at driving.
I think everybody thinks that, though.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that my grandma, Phyllis, probably not listening, but if you're listening, the driver of her group, who recently passed away, wonderful woman, rest in peace, but she was 99 years old, who would, yeah, when they went on things, they drove around. So yeah, I'm just saying, you can't just look at age and, you know,
or the state of Ohio,
but you should. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, they should just get rid of all their roads. What they should do, go back to horse and buggy.
David on the text line says, we need to get Robbie some help. I moved past this stage in my life. We're all good now.
Yeah, this is, yeah, you know, we can all look back when we were young and see some mistakes.
Good rant, Michelle. I enjoyed that one.
Thank you, guys. Or just give somebody a little heart with your hands. Thumbs up or heart, man. Okay?
That's a pretty good one, too.
The Bieber, the, like, this thing?
Yes. I'm scared that you know that.
I'm kind of scared he knows that, too. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.